Chapter 128. Further continuation of the enterprise of Mr. Jonas and his friend. It was a special quality, among the many admirable qualities possessed by Mr. Pecksniff, that the more he was found out, the more hypocrisy he practiced. Let him be discomfited in one quarter, and he refreshed and recompensed himself by carrying the war into another. If his workings and windings were detected by A, so much the greater reason was there for practicing without loss of time on B, if it were only to keep his hand in. He had never been such a saintly and improving spectacle to all about him as after his detection by Thomas Pinch. He had scarcely ever been at once so tender in his humanity and so dignified and exalted in his virtue as when young Martin's scorn was fresh and hot upon him. Having this large stock of superfluous sentiment and morality on hand which must positively be cleared off at any sacrifice, Mr. Pecksniff no sooner heard his son-in-law announced than he regarded him as a kind of wholesaler general order to be immediately executed. Descending, therefore, swiftly to the parlor and clasping the young man in his arms, he exclaimed, with looks and gestures that denoted the perturbation of his spirit, "Jonas, my child, she is well. There is nothing the matter? Apostrophe, what, you're at it again, are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe," replied his son-in-law. "Even with me? Get away with you, will you? Apostrophe, tell me she is well then, apostrophe," said Mr. Pecksniff. "Tell me she is well, my boy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she's well enough, apostrophe," retorted Jonas, disengaging himself. "There's nothing the matter with her. Apostrophe, there is nothing the matter with her. Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried Mr. Pecksniff, sitting down in the nearest chair and rubbing up his hair. "Fie upon my weakness. I cannot help it, Jonas. Thank you. I am better now. How is my other child, my eldest, my Cheruerichigo?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, inventing a playful little name for her in the restored lightness of his heart. "She's much about the same as usual, apostrophe," returned Jonas. "She sticks pretty close to the vinegar bottle. You know she's got a sweetheart, I suppose?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have heard of it, apostrophe," said Mr. Pecksniff, "from headquarters. From my child herself I will not deny that it moved me to contemplate the loss of my remaining daughter. Jonas, I am afraid we parents are selfish. I am afraid we are, but it has ever been the study of my life to qualify them for the domestic hearth, and it is a sphere which Cherry will adorn." "Apostrophe, she need adorn some sphere or other, apostrophe," observed the son-in-law, "for she ain't very ornamental in general." "Apostrophe, my girls are now provided for, apostrophe," said Mr. Pecksniff. "They are now happily provided for, and I have not labored in vain." Apostrophe, apostrophe, this is exactly what Mr. Pecksniff would have said if one of his daughters had drawn a prize of £30,000 in the lottery, or if the other had picked up a valuable purse in the street, which nobody appeared to claim. In either of these cases he would have invoked a patriarchal blessing on the fortunate head, with great solemnity, and would have taken immense credit to himself, as having meant it from the infant's cradle. "Suppose we talk about something else now," apostrophe observed Jonas, dryly. "Just for a change. Are you quite agreeable?" "Apostrophe, quite, apostrophe," said Mr. Pecksniff. "Ah, you wag, you naughty wag. You laugh at poor old fond papa. Well, he deserves it. And he don't mind it either, for his feelings are their own reward. You have come to stay with me, Jonas?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, no. I've got a friend with me, apostrophe," said Jonas. "Bring your friend." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried Mr. Pecksniff, in a gush of hospitality. "Bring any number of your friends. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this ain't the sort of man to be brought, apostrophe," said Jonas, contemptuously. "I think I see myself bringing him to your house for a treat. Thank ye all the same, but he's a little too near the top of the tree for that, Pecksniff. Apostrophe, the good man pricked up his ears. His interest was awakened. A position near the top of the tree was greatness, virtue, goodness, sense, genius, or, it should rather be said, a dispensation from all, and in itself something immeasurably better than all, with Mr. Pecksniff. A man who was able to look down upon Mr. Pecksniff could not be looked up at by that gentleman with too great an amount of deference, or from a position of too much humility. So it always is with great spirits. I'll tell you what you may do, if you like, apostrophe said Jonas. You may come and dine with us at the Dragon. We were forced to come down to Salisbury last night on some business, and I got him to bring me over here this morning in his carriage. At least, not his own carriage, for we had a breakdown in the night, but one we hired instead. It's all the same. Mind what you're about, you know. He's not used to all sorts. He only mixes with the best. Apostrophe, apostrophe, some young nobleman who has been borrowing money of you at good interest, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, shaking his forefinger facetiously. I shall be delighted to know the gay sprig. Apostrophe, borrowing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, echoed Jonas. Borrowing. When you're a 20th part as rich as he is, you may shut up shop. We should be pretty well off if we could buy his furniture and plate and pictures by clubbing together. A likely man to borrow. Mr. Montague. Why, since I was lucky enough, come. And I'll say, sharp enough, to get a share in the assurance office that he's president of. I've made never mind what I've made, apostrophe said Jonas, seeming to recover all at once his usual caution. You know me pretty well, and I don't blab about such things. But, ecod, I've made a trifle. Apostrophe, really, my dear Jonas, apostrophe cried Mr. Pecksniff, with much warmth, a gentleman like this should receive some attention. Would he like to see the church, or if he has a taste for the fine arts which I have no doubt he has, from the description you give of his circumstances I can send him down a few portfolios. Salisbury Cathedral, my dear Jonas, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff. The mention of the portfolios and his anxiety to display himself to advantage, suggesting his usual phraseology in that regard, is an edifice replete with venerable associations, and strikingly suggestive of the loftiest emotions. It is here we contemplate the work of bygone ages. It is here we listen to the swelling organ, as we stroll through the reverberating aisles. We have drawings of this celebrated structure from the north, from the south, from the east, from the west, from the southeast, from the northwest apostrophe, during this digression, and indeed during the whole dialogue. Jonas had been rocking on his chair, with his hands in his pockets, and his head thrown cunningly on one side. He looked at Mr. Pecksniff now with such shrewd meaning twinkling in his eyes, that Mr. Pecksniff stopped, and asked him what he was going to say. Ecod. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he answered. Pecksniff, if I knew how you meant to leave your money, I could put you in the way of doubling it in no time. It wouldn't be bad to keep a chance like this snug in the family. But you're such a deep one. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Jonas. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Pecksniff, much affected. I am not a diplomatical character. My heart is in my hand. By far the greater part of the inconsiderable savings I have accumulated in the course of I hope a not dishonorable or useless career is already given, devised, and bequeathed. Correct me, my dear Jonas, if I am technically wrong, with expressions of confidence, which I will not repeat, and insecurities which it is unnecessary to mention to a person whom I cannot, whom I will not, whom I need not, name. Apostrophe here he gave the hand of his son-in-law a fervent squeeze, as if he would have added, God bless you, be very careful of it when you get it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Jonas only shook his head and laughed, and, seeming to think better of what he had had in his mind, said, no. He would keep his own counsel. apostrophe, but as he observed that he would take a walk, Mr. Pecksniff insisted on accompanying him, remarking that he could leave a cart for Mr. Montague, as they went along, by way of gentleman usher to himself at dinner time, which he did. In the course of their walk, Mr. Jonas affected to maintain that close reserve which had operated as a timely check upon him during the foregoing dialogue. And as he made no attempt to conciliate Mr. Pecksniff, but, on the contrary, was more boorish and rude to him than usual, that gentleman, so far from suspecting his real design, laid himself out to be attacked with advantage. For it is in the nature of a knave to think the tools with which he works indispensable to knavery, and knowing what he would do himself in such a case, Mr. Pecksniff argued, if this young man wanted anything of me for his own ends, he would be polite and deferential. Apostrophe, the more Jonas repelled him in his hints and inquiries, the more solicitous, therefore, Mr. Pecksniff became to be initiated into the golden mysteries at which he had obscurely glanced. Why should there be cold and worldly secrets, he observed, between relations? What was life without confidence? If the chosen husband of his daughter, the man to whom he had delivered her with so much pride and hope, such bounding and such beaming joy, if he were not a green spot in the barren waste of life, where was that oasis to be found? Little did Mr. Pecksniff think on what a very green spot he planted one foot at that moment. Little did he foresee when he said, all is but dust. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how very shortly he would come down with his own. Inch by inch, in his grudging and ill-conditioned way, sustained to the life, for the hope of making Mr. Pecksniff suffer in that tender place, the pocket, where Jonas smarted so terribly himself, gave him an additional and malicious interest in the wiles he was set on to practice. Inch by inch, and bit by bit, Jonas rather allowed the dazzling prospects of the Anglo-Bengalee establishment to escape him than paraded them before his greedy listener. And in the same niggardly spirit, he left Mr. Pecksniff to infer, if he chose, which he did choose, of course, that a consciousness of not having any great natural gifts of speech and manner himself rendered him desirous to have the credit of introducing to Mr. Montague someone who was well endowed in those respects, and so atone for his own deficiencies. Otherwise, he muttered discontentedly, he would have seen his beloved father-in-law far enough off, apostrophe, before he would have taken him into his confidence. Primed in this artful manner, Mr. Pecksniff presented himself at dinner time in such a state of suavity, benevolence, cheerfulness, politeness, and cordiality, as even he had perhaps never attained before. The frankness of the country gentleman, the refinement of the artist, the good-humored allowance of the man of the world, philanthropy, forbearance, piety, toleration, all blended together in a flexible adaptability to anything and everything, were expressed in Mr. Pecksniff, as he shook hands with the great speculator and capitalist. Welcome, respected sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, to our humble village. We are a simple people, primitive clods, Mr. Montague, but we can appreciate the honor of your visit, as my dear son-in-law can testify. It is very strange, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, pressing his hand almost reverentially, but I seem to know you. That towering forehead, my dear Jonas, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff aside, and those clustering masses of rich hair, I must have seen you, my dear sir, in the sparkling throng. Apostrophe, nothing was more probable, they all agreed. I could have wished, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, to have had the honor of introducing you to an elderly inmate of our house, to the uncle of our friend. Mr. Chuzzlewit, sir, would have been proud indeed to have taken you by the hand. Apostrophe, is the gentleman here now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Montague, turning deeply red. He is, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff. You said nothing about that, Chuzzlewit. Apostrophe, I didn't suppose you'd care to hear of it, apostrophe, returned Jonas. You wouldn't care to know him, I can promise you. apostrophe, Jonas, my dear Jonas, apostrophe remonstrated Mr. Pecksniff. Really? Oh, it's all very well for you to speak up for him, apostrophe said Jonas. You have nailed him. You will get a fortune by him. Apostrophe, oh oh. Is the wind in that quarter? Apostrophe cried Montague. Ha, 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 and here they all laughed, especially Mr. Pecksniff. No, no. Apostrophe said that gentleman, clapping his son-in-law playfully upon the shoulder. You must not believe all that my young relative says, Mr. Montague. You may believe him in official business, and trust him in official business, but you must not attach importance to his flights of fancy. Apostrophe, upon my life, Mr. Pecksniff, apostrophe cried Montague, I attach the greatest importance to that last observation of his. I trust and hope it's true. Money cannot be turned and turned again quickly enough in the ordinary course, Mr. Pecksniff. There is nothing like building our fortune on the weaknesses of mankind. Apostrophe, oh fie, for shame. Apostrophe cried Mr. Pecksniff. But they all laughed again, especially Mr. Pecksniff. I give you my honor that we do it, apostrophe said Montague. Oh fie, fie. Apostrophe cried Mr. Pecksniff. You are very pleasant. That I am sure you don't. That I am sure you don't. How can you know? Apostrophe, again they all laughed in concert, and again Mr. Pecksniff laughed especially. This was very agreeable indeed. It was confidential, easy, straightforward, and still left Mr. Pecksniff in the position of being in a gentle way the mentor of the party. The greatest achievements in the article of cookery that the Dragon had ever performed were set before them. The oldest and best wines in the Dragon's cellar saw the light on that occasion. 1,000 bubbles, indicative of the wealth and station of Mr. Montague in the depths of his pursuits, were constantly rising to the surface of the conversation, and they were as frank and merry as three honest men could be. Mr. Pecksniff thought it a pity, he said, so that Mr. Montague should think lightly of mankind and their weaknesses. He was anxious upon this subject. His mind ran upon it. In one way or another he was constantly coming back to it. He must make a convert of him, he said. And as often as Mr. Montague repeated his sentiment about building fortunes on the weaknesses of mankind, and added frankly, we do it. Just as often Mr. Pecksniff repeated oh fie, for shame. I am sure you don't. How can you know? Laying a greater stress each time on those last words. The frequent repetition of this playful inquiry on the part of Mr. Pecksniff led at last to playful answers on the part of Mr. Montague. But after some little sharp shooting on both sides, Mr. Pecksniff became grave, almost to tears, observing that if Mr. Montague would give him leave, he would drink the health of his young kinsman, Mr. Jonas, congratulating him upon the valuable and distinguished friendship he had formed, but envying him, he would confess, his usefulness to his fellow creatures. For, if he understood the objects of that institution with which he was newly and advantageously connected, knowing them, but imperfectly they were calculated to do good, and for his, Mr. Pecksniff's, part, if he could in any way promote them, he thought he would be able to lay his head upon his pillow every night, with an absolute certainty of going to sleep at once. The transition from this accidental remark, for it was quite accidental, and had fallen from Mr. Pecksniff in the openness of his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.